Blog Talk Radio.
Article 7, Section 3 allows for a citizen filibuster. If I stand here and refuse to yield my time, you are prohibited from voting on the bill. Let the filibustering begin. As many of you have noted that use the internet, it has been announced that Disney has required the rights to the Star Wars franchise, and in the summer of 2015, we will see the release of Star Wars Episode 7. Herewith is my proposal for the plot of that movie. Begin with standard title sequence and John Williams fanfare, followed by a scroll to be written. I would like to mention that Brian De Palma wrote the original opening scroll for Star Wars Episode 4, A New Hope. I think it would be a nice nod to the franchise if he were to write this opening scroll. Then, pan down from the twin suns of Tatooine, we are now close on the mouth of the Sarlacc pit. After a beat, the gloved Mandalorian armor gauntlet of Boba Fett grabs onto the sand outside the Sarlacc pit, and the feared bounty hunter pulls himself from the maw of the sand beast.
Okay, this is exactly...
And we realize that he survived his fall during the battle at Jabba's palace ship. Oh, then do a hard cut to a repurposed Imperial destroyer, which has now been taken over by the rebels. Commander Luke Skywalker, now a full Jedi Knight, training new Padawans, is using, ironically, his father Anakin's red lightsaber, which will be a symbolic, I think, visual for his battle with how to both bring about the new Jedi Order while still acknowledging his father's fall from grace. As he is training the Padawans, we pan outside of the control window to a nearby asteroid where we see, and please allow me to finish this because it's going to seem like a bit of a jump, we see Thanos, who was the villain teased at the end of the first Avengers movie. Now, Thanos, as you know, owns the Infinity Gauntlet, which has the time gem, the mind gem, the power gem, the space gem, and the reality gem. If he holds the reality gem, that means he can jump from different realities. This will be our link to the Marvel Universe from the Star Wars Universe.
Faster than a speeding bullet. More powerful than a locomotive. Able to leap tall buildings at a single bound. Look, up in the sky. It's a bird. It's a plane.
No, it's Max, Darrow, and D-Bert, your host for the Comic Shop Show.
Good evening, good evening, and again, good evening, folks. This is the Grindhouse. Unfortunately, one of our crew members is persona non grata. That person would be, of course, the great Captain Kirk. Kirk is down and out with a cold. Who would have thunk that Luke Cage himself, and I say this because he's a physical fitness buff, guy is big, and he looks like Luke Cage, believe it or not. So we always go back and forth with the Luke Cage Black Panther thing. Of course, I will take the Black Panther thing. That's me. Anyway, Luke Cage, a.k.a. Captain Kirk, is out sick. So myself and, of course, the uncanny Daryl B. will pick up his slack and keep it moving. He will be returning to the air, I would suspect, on Wednesday or maybe Saturday, but let's hopefully he'll be able to shake off this flu. Something is going around. Folks, the caller number, once again, 646-915-9620, 646-915-9620. That opening segment, just too lengthy, although funny as all get out, after comedian Patton Oswalt ranting his infamous rant with the merging of different universes, a consummate geekgasm that we heard right there. And I must mention something else. He is in, I think, I think the latest episode of Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee, which is Jerry Seinfeld's YouTube/Crackle vehicle, and he always picks up his fellow comedians in cars that personality-wise remind you of that comedian. So what do you think Patton Oswalt was picked up in? He was picked up in the DeLorean, or a DeLorean. So he was definitely paying homage to Oswalt's geek sensibilities. All right, anyway, without further ado, let's go to a real quick nerdcore groove. I mean quick, maybe a minute, minute and a half, and then we'll just have to get into it. There's a lot to discuss, folks. Again, welcome to the Grindhouse double feature show, The Comic Shop, now, 7 p.m., Afro Nerd Radio. This is Eep, Op, Ork, Ah-Ah. I kid you not. From the Jetsons. Eep, Op, Ork, Ah-Ah, Violent Femmes. Let's groove. We'll be right back.
Eep, eep, op, op, ork, ork, ah, 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 ah. Eep, eep, op, op, ork, ork, ah, 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 ah. Get in this capsule, baby. We are blasting off.
Eep, op, ork, ah, ah. Eep, op, ork, ah, ah. Eep, op, ork, ah, ah.
Snatches, I love you. That's of my baby for a ride with the baby.
Eep, op, ork, ah, ah.
I met a little man with a funny, funny face.
Eep, op, ork, ah, ah.
All right, okay, enough of that. Once again, Violent Femmes, Eep, Op, Ork, Ah, Ah. As I was talking about before, is out sick. He's in the ready room, convalescing. So, without further ado, there's always the uncanny Daryl B.
Breaking news. The Ultimate Universe, and by extension, Miles Morales, is still alive. That just came across comic book resources. I'll have more information later.
Yes, I'm going to do one of your numbers, Daryl. You're usually very adroit at pointing out passings, and there's quite a few people that have passed. Perhaps Amiri Baraka, I will go more in depth. Amiri Baraka, a.k.a. Leroy Jones, he's left the building. That's more of an Afro Nerd segment. Again, folks, at 7 p.m., I will be discussing the passing of Amiri Baraka. But also, Run Run Shaw. Now, for those who can carry their head of lettuce, I don't know if that makes any sense. Anyway, I'm going to make it make sense. For those who know something about martial arts filmmaking, about Asian cinema, there's no way you would be a child of the 80s, a child of the late 70s, a child of pop culture, really, even into this day, with you not coming across the Shaw Brothers film studios or the Shaw organization. Run Run Shaw left the building a few days ago at the age, I believe, of 106 years old. And when we're talking about, I mean, trust me, I wouldn't doubt that the RZA is shedding some tears right now.
Listen,
and also Quentin Tarantino, because without the Shaw Brothers studio, I don't know if either of these gentlemen would have a career. Your thoughts on that, Daryl?
Hey, let's play.
Realistically,
look, come
and
drink
Robert,
with me.
And Robert Rodriguez on that, too. Robert Rodriguez,
yes.
Also.
Come Drink With Me, Five Fingers of Death, The Avenging Angel, Eagle, and my favorite, The 36th Chamber of Shaolin. Why? I'm a Wu-Tang man. What gave Wu-Tang what Wu-Tang was? The 36th Chamber. Without him, we don't have the Wu-Tang Clan. Run, Run, Shaw, for that. For that alone, you're a legend in my eyes. But I remember the $2 cinema. I remember sitting down there. I remember wanting to be Leroy, Roy, Roy, Roy. You know, we don't get the Last Dragon without Run, Run, Shaw. We don't have Rush Hour, which is the one of the most, well, I won't say sell out, but let's just say mainstream type films without Run, Run, Shaw, because Jackie Chan was a disciple of Run, Run, Shaw. Dude is a legend. Dude crossed over all racial lines because you could not watch one of his movies and not be awed by just the technical, almost artistry of the fight scenes. Run, Run, Shaw, rest in peace. You have touched a lot of people and inspired others. And you know what? You will be sorely missed. Back to you, Afro-Nerd.
Yeah, we have to really, you know, we may have to revisit this because, you know, we could practically do an entire show on Run, Run, Shaw and Shaw Brothers. I think we might have mentioned the Shaw Brothers maybe once or twice in our discussions on the show. But I'm just thinking of other folks. John Woo, also heavily influenced by Shaw Brothers filmmaking. So when you factor in John Woo, the RZA, Quentin Tarantino, Robert Rodriguez, the fact that we call this show on Saturdays the Grindhouse has a lot to do with Shaw Brothers' Asian cinematic work. So it's a heavy blow, and what Darryl was talking about, as always, very on point because he also played a role in aligning himself with not being afraid to align himself with Western sensibilities and Western business ventures. I found out this recently that the Shaw Brothers studios were heavily invested in Blade Runner. So we might not have had a Blade Runner. And now the only mark, and I say that kind of to be funny, the only mark against the Shaw Brothers studio is the fact that they turned down Bruce Lee.
Yeah.
Now, isn't that something?
That's one
and
of the most famous gaffes of all time. And up until his dying day, he regretted that. He didn't know what Bruce Lee was. He didn't. And it just goes to show that the best of us doesn't know everything.
Well, listen, even with what we're trying to do here, and I don't want to sound like we're in that same category, but it's a difficult thing to discuss new art, new cinema, new information, new content. I mean, essentially what we are providing is somewhat new content from a black perspective. No one seems to know about this. So it's always very difficult to align yourself with folks. And sometimes people will miss some things. You know, Afropunk is on the rise, Darryl, as you know. We talk about that incessantly. Black rock in New York City specifically in the Tri-State area is a big thing. These people sell out clubs, and yet trying to talk about this. I mean, when you look up, not to go off on a tangent per se, but I'll be brief. When you look up, and I would suggest the audience even do this, look up New York's largest music festival. Just put that in, New York's largest music festival. Afropunk undoubtedly, comes up. So sometimes people just don't get things. But what happened there was you're talking about, what was the competing studio, Dow? Harvest? And that's what really
the Golden Harvest? No.
Yes. I think it is Golden Harvest. That was the studio that employed Bruce Lee. That's why that went down the way that it did. So anyway, Golden Harvest, correct. Golden Harvest was the competing studio. And I believe Raymond Chow ran that studio, and Raymond Chow had a lock on Bruce Lee, but he just didn't, he didn't get Bruce Lee. A lot of people did. Hey, listen, a lot of Western audiences didn't get Bruce Lee. They didn't get him. And yet 40 years later, we're still talking about it, and the martial arts cinema has never really been the same. All right, getting back into the poll again, folks. This is the Grindhouse. The call-in number is 646-915-9620. As I mentioned at the top of the show, the great Captain is out sick. That's right. Captain Kirk, a.k.a. Luke Cage, has a cold. We wish him a speedy recovery, so he will be returning, I suspect, on Wednesday for the Midweek and Review show. Anyway, a lot to get into, Darryl. I think I'm just going to bounce around a little bit. Something that I think is slowly gaining some traction, this deal with Robert Kirkman's statement. I believe he made this at the Image Expo. Image Comics has an expo where they unveil their latest upcoming projects. So Robert Kirkman, noted writer, now TV wunderkind behind The Walking Dead, Walking Dead comic, and, of course, the TV show, he bluntly said that Marvel is a poorly run company that is partially destroying the comics industry. So I've been hearing a lot of dust up over DC. A lot of DC creators are having problems and making some pretty blunt statements. But Marvel is a poorly run company. What are your thoughts about that?
You know what? I 90% agree with him. And I'm a Marvel zombie, and I 90% agree with him. Let's call a spade here, okay? I rip DC a lot over their editorial choices, over some of the ways they handle talent. That's the one thing that Marvel has over DC. When it comes to the talent, they handle them correctly. I won't say correctly, but 9 times out of 10, they do right by their talent, okay? But how often have we come on this show and go like, oh, Fearless Defenders, we're getting people to go and check the book out, oh, it's canceled. Wait, what? It's canceled. Young Avengers, oh, they're breaking new ground in terms of the mainstream companies with these characters, and we love how the direction, oh, it's canceled. Wait, what? It's canceled? Oh, but no problem, we're going to have an 8th Wolverine book on the stand. Oh, no problem, we're going to have a 7th Spider-Man book on the stand. Oh, no problem, we're going to have a 20th X-Men book on the stand. And then you have the different books using the same character during the same, like, time frame in different ways with different – where you don't know the character anymore. That's – when he says – they don't know how to run the company, I take it in that respect, all right? Think about it. He brought up this, and it's been echoed. I know the captain said it, all right? I know you said it after picking up the Nick Fury Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or taking a look at that compendium by his compendium from the 60s. You have an Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. show, okay? It is doing gangbusters on television. Is it as good as it should be? No. All right? But tell me the book you're picking up where you could see these characters. Tell me how that show is going to act like a gateway to your print universe. Because you don't have a book out like that. All right? You have Avengers. Avengers hits the big screen. Okay? And the characters didn't match any book at that time. But then you decide to do the right thing and you create Avengers Assembled by Bendis, all right? And he creates this book utilizing many of the characters that are on the screen. That is cool. The problem is he goes and uses Thanos. All right, so what's the problem with that? Well, you just had a crossover, a giant crossover, that went under the radar where Thanos, Star-Lord, which he brought back for the Series 2, and Nova were all trapped in another universe that was dying, that was about to collapse. But yet, you let Bendis come, okay, I'm going to use Thanos and Star-Lord for this book. To the normal guy, oh, that's cool, they're going to be in the book. To folks like you and me, we're like, okay, so how'd you bring them back and not bring back Nova? Or how'd you bring them back without releasing the denizens of that universe back into our own? Okay, that was the whole Thanos imperative, folks. Pick it up. It was a great read, but that was supposed to have lasting ramifications. Yet you let on the right hand lasting ramifications. On the left hand, you go and let Bendis use those characters. So where are the ramifications? The problem with Marvel is they are star driven. Okay, they are star driven. This looks cool. We're going to run with this. But you don't think of the ramifications of the actions. All right? And I know people, you're trying to follow me here, and I'm trying to speak rationally as possible. So I'll use this analogy. Okay? This one is a simple analogy. Okay? You think a gun is cool. You want to fire the gun, but you don't have any experience firing the gun. But you're going to fire it anyway. You fire it without eye protection. You fire it without air protection. You fire it without a proper stance. And you hurt yourself in the process of firing. But as you're bleeding, lying back after you fire, and you see the hole, the bullet made in the dummy that you were firing at, you look up and say, that's cool. But you ignore all the damage that's been done to you because you improperly handled this machinery. Sorry, I'm speaking army talk here, but you can kind of get the gist. Marvel, big buck, quick buck, but they never look ahead at the ramifications. That's where I agree with Kirkman saying Marvel could be much better right now if they ran things a bit better. Back to you, Afro-Nerd.
Yeah, let's get into some specifics. This is courtesy of bleedingcool.com, excellent website, by the way, folks, bleedingcool.com. And it says here that a fan asks if Kirkman will have bad blood with Marvel. I don't have bad blood with Marvel per se, poorly run company that is partially destroying the comic book industry, he answers. Kirkman says he thinks there are a lot of good people in the company and they publish good material, but their upper management is extremely short-sighted with the negative effects on the industry, and the fan base Marvel caters to, which Kirkman counts himself among, is not going to be around for 100 years. I always try to look at the long game, he says. Every time he's critical of Marvel, Kirkman says, it's because he loves them and wishes they were doing a better job. So he pretty much, in a nutshell, pretty much said what you said, Daryl, without the analogy, but it's pretty much what he's saying, is that they could be a better company, and they seem to be ignoring their core demographic, that would be the geeks, quest of the almighty dollar.
And just think about it, right? How much money did Avengers pull in?
$1 billion.
All right. Now think about it. Say you had your Marvel. Wouldn't you jump on that? Wouldn't you, like, okay, we're having our main debut here. We're going to hand out copies of the latest Avengers series to everybody that walks in to this location. Hey, you're coming in to check it out? Here's a free copy. It would cost you about $50,000-$60,000. But off a billion-dollar-making movie, wouldn't you hook in, like, if you hook in, like, 10% of the people you handed free copies of your Avengers series to right there, wouldn't you make up that money? You know, wouldn't it help out your print version?
The only problem, Daryl, though, and we have to kind of do an addendum from a few shows ago, is that, you know, I had mentioned how I thought, that the private retailers or the mom-and-pop comic book stores were doing poorly, I might have to turn things around because statistically the numbers are coming back saying that actually last year was a pretty good year for comic book retailers. I think they said they went up 9%. So actually what's going to happen is these folks are being rewarded with a certain modicum of success. Even on the print side, the comic books are actually being sold. People are buying comics again.
But
so
I'm just
that's
I'm
where
just
we're going to have problems. Well, hold on for a minute. That's where we're going to have problems because, you know, these guys are going to come back with million-dollar receipts, and now the print appears to be moving up a notch or a few notches now, and they're not going to have any incentive to change.
Yeah, but again, I'm comics first. All right, and I never make any bones about it. I'm comics first. I love reading it in my hand. I love reading it on the screen. Don't get me wrong. I love the movies. I love the animated joints. But there's nothing to me that beats just sitting down and reading a good comic book. You're making millions when you could possibly be making hundreds of millions. I think that's what Kirkman's getting at here, where, oh, you're making money, but you're not maximizing your profit here with good business sense, with good control, with good taking stock on what you have. You're cutting books that are successful. You're prolonging books that are stuttering across the finish line. You know, it's frustrating. I think that's what Kirkman was getting at. Mind you, Marvel had Kirkman on a Spider-Man book, on Marvel 2-in-1, on Ultimate X-Men. You had Kirkman, and Kirkman tried to do a lot more ideas that got shot down by editorial, and then he went over and started putting all of his energy into Invincible and Walking Dead, and you see how those books have taken off. I'm just saying. Back to you, Afrinar.
Yeah, actually, I even picked up, speaking of Kirkman, because I respect him so much as a writer, I picked up a series that goes back, I guess, a little bit less than 10 years, the 2099 Marvel Knights series.
Yeah.
I believe he was behind that as well. So he's definitely a prolific dude. I want to do a quick turnaround, and I want to really get into Wonder Woman for him, just a kind of a quick blurb. Now, you know, actually, in talking about Wonder Woman, Gal Gadot, the actress, it's, you know, part of this is even who is discussing comic books now. That's another element. I've been getting information from Dow, Motley Fool, Business Insider. Since it's funny how all of a sudden now the financial media has an interest in talking shop about geekdom. This is part of that culture now. Now you have people are looking at these properties a little bit differently, with great intensity, than the geeks are looking at them. And this is an article. I mean, I found out about Gal Gadot thing through Business Insider. Business Insider. They're looking at this. Well, first of all, they're talking about Ms. Gadot going through the training process. And I'm trying to figure out how much time is, because they're going to start filming, like, really, what, the next month, 2 months?
Yeah.
So, but, so I'm thinking, well, first of all, it's got to be a cameo. I can't imagine her having, like, a major, major role. Not right now. I mean, this is Batman and Superman. But we'll see. Well, you know, I'm assuming she's going to have some kind of physical presence, because Mark Twight, who was the personal trainer for Henry Cavill, he's the one who's training her. Discussions of bulking up, getting in shape, cross training. I mean, she's going to go through it. If she was part, if she was truly a part of the Israeli army, which is well respected military operation or military service, I should say, she should be able to. She can't be a girl. Even though she is a beauteous one, she can't be a girl, because she's going to have to be put through hell, to gain 25 to 40 pounds to really look like a Wonder Woman. She's got to look like a fitness model to pull it off. You know, she got to look like a fitness model. So we'll see. You know, a lot of money at stake when Business Insider is talking about. Now, also, I want to get your opinion on this. I heard that there's some twisted plot device that Wonder Woman may actually be Kryptonian. What? What? What?
Ed, wait. And
Hold on. Just as you lambasted it and appropriately put Marvel on the grill, Warner Brothers, its distant cousin, seems to be pulling the same crap. If this is the case, if they do that, it'll totally erase Wonder Woman's mythology. If they do something stupid like this, what are your thoughts?
Which means Warner Brothers will do it. But, all right, okay. So I took my people to task. Now I'll take the opposition to task. Warner Brothers, Wonder Woman's history is clearly defined. What the bleep, bleep, bleep are you doing? Of course, folks, the bleep, bleep, bleep means I get to stay on Blog Talk Radio for a few more minutes. What Kryptonian? Really? What? Okay, all right. It's one thing to give Afro Nerd his wish in this week's Earth 2, all right? And I sprung that one on you, but you're going to have to check out the latest issue of Earth 2 to see what I'm talking about. It's another thing to make Wonder Woman a Kryptonian. I love Greek mythology. I love Wonder Woman. I love Themyscira. I love the relationship with Steve Trevor. I love the almost sisterly fights between her and Cersei, to me, of Wonder Woman's makeup. And that all revolves around her origin. You make her Kryptonian? That's like making Supergirl an angel. Even though that was written well by Peter David, that is wrong. That is so fundamental. Mere words can't describe how wrong that is. All right? Because, all right, this is different than if you're making her a different ethnicity. Okay? Being an Amazon is intrinsically tied to the Princess Diana / Wonder Woman mythos. You change that. Go back to my arguments about what the latest Peter Parker in the Amazing Spider-Man movie. Okay, just so you people don't realize that I'm going totally off the rails here, because I've said this before. You change fundamental facts about the character and its history, you change the character. If they make her Kryptonian, then guess what? She's Supergirl. She's Superwoman. She is not, and I repeat with capital letters and large lines underneath, she is not Amazonian. And all of this, right here, Warner Brothers, I've said it before. I said, prove me wrong. Show me you have a workable plan here that won't piss us all off. The mere fact that this is getting leaked out means you have severely or consciously thought about this, and you're putting it out there to see the feelers of what the internet crowd, what your fan base, what creators, what the public, what business would think about it. And if you're even thinking about this notion, you've done wrecked this character. Back to you, Afro Nerd.
Yeah, I would have to agree with you. I mean, and I'll tell you something else that's funny, is that the actress herself, you know, when she was defending herself against the critics, she believes she's playing an Amazon, doesn't she?
Hold on, Dow.
This would even be news to her, because in response to she's too skinny and she needs to have a boob job, she said, well, in true Amazonian mythology, I'm supposed to have one breast. So she thinks she's playing an Amazon. So I don't believe this is going to go down. And also, didn't Warner Brothers learn from the Catwoman, Halle Berry debacle, the lovely Ms. Halle Berry? Not really her fault. More about the fact that they changed who Catwoman was. They changed that character and called her Catwoman.
And remember, Halle Berry signed that thinking that, oh, I'm going to be a part of the Bat franchise. Halle Berry went into it thinking that she was going to be a part of the Bat franchise almost. It's a character I've always wanted to play, da, 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 and then they go and rewrite the character.
You know something else, Daryl? You know, listen, they had the template, although it's a Marvel template, and I guess they don't want to broach that topic. But Thor is an excellent example of someone who's able, the character has been able to actually transcend different genres and able to mix it up with all with science fiction and with World War II mythology or World War II faux history with Captain America. And I mean, and all these different genres that Marvel seems to have been able to master, Thor fits right in. But if they somewhere they feel as if they don't know how to incorporate Greek mythology or a mythological storyline into the Justice League thing, so they're just going to scrap it. And again, we see how that worked out for Catwoman. I really would doubt that they're going to go there.
Yeah, one of these days we're going to have a show where we play what if. We take some of these news stories that we've reported on over the last, hey, it's been about 3 years now. Go like, we take one of these couple of these stories, and we change some of the things that happen a little bit, tweak it a little bit, and see what the outcome would be. We come up with our own scenarios, you know? And this would be one of them. What if Warner Brothers let Josh Whedon go ahead with this Wonder Woman movie that he was going to believe, that he wanted to do? What if? Think about it. The last 5 years, the last cinematic 5 years that we've reported on would have been totally changed. But I'm just putting it out there, all right? Josh Whedon had a World War II Wonder Woman script all ready to go, and Warner Brothers turned it down. Not just turned it down, vehemently denied it, saying this won't work with today's audiences. Did Captain America work?
All right.
Back to you,
all right,
after nerd.
Let's go to a quick Nerdcore groove. When we get back, let's talk about diversity. Now, we always talk about diversity, but let's talk about it from a different angle. Only because, and maybe thankfully, it seems as if the industry is starting to actually talk about it now, or industry leaders or certain places that you wouldn't necessarily expect it to be discussed. They're discussing it more. So we're going to talk about it, not that we haven't talked about it before, but talk about it from a different angle. All right, let's go to, as I said, a Nerdcore groove. This is Saturday Morning Cartoon's Greatest Hits, done by rock artists, a little different. This is the Fat Albert theme by Dig. We'll be right back. Let's groove.
Why would you want this? Na, na, na.
Okay, we're back. Saturday morning greatest cartoons, and that was, of course, Fat Albert by Dig, the redo. And actually, Fat Albert, the DVD set is available. I picked up the entire series. Fat Albert and the Cosby Kids, of course, the great Dr. Bill Cosby. He's the Svengali behind it, and I think he's done some of the voice characterization behind it. So, and actually, also the Jackson 5. The Jackson 5, that cartoon from the early 70s is available on Blu-ray. I think it's been around for about a year. So for those who want to reminisce, Fat Albert, unfortunately, is not in Blu-ray, but the Jackson 5 cartoon, who was that? I'm trying to think of the makers behind that cartoon, Daryl.
Not Hanna-Barbera.
Rankin and Bass?
Yeah, Rankin and Bass.
Yes, yes.
Also,
he did a lot of cartoons, so.
Also, quick point aside, if you haven't seen Bill Cosby's latest stand-up thing that he released with Comedy Central, Far From Finish, I highly recommend it. It's hilarious.
Yeah, he hasn't lost a step, which is important. Also, something we discussed behind the scenes, and actually we mentioned it last year, and I didn't get a chance to check it out last year, so I got to really make a concerted effort to check this out. Always supporting minority endeavors, especially since we're going to get into the issues of diversity. There's a Black Comic Book Festival, the second annual comic book festival that's being held at the noted Schomburg Museum in Harlem next week, Friday and Saturday. And it's going to have visual presentations, films, artists, writers. So, and I think it's growing. I mean, not unlike, I always compare it with everything to Afropunk. I suspect that this might actually end up getting bigger and bigger. And before you know it, you're going to see something that might rival, at least from a comic book perspective, what Afropunk has done. So hopefully, you know, well, I definitely will be there. I think Dow's going to try to be there, maybe even the captain. But we need to support these things because we have to get out this box, Darrell. We have to. And delving into the next topic, turning things around, somewhat tangentially connected, issues of diversity became a topic at this Image Expo that we referenced earlier. Image Comics, everyone knows about Image Comics, and I don't know if you can you even consider Image an indie operation at this point now?
No.
Factor, Walking Dead, Kirkman, and all these people. I think Image is not quite where Marvel and DC, where they are, but they're definitely making a good shot at it, at trying, you know, this is pretty big.
Dem and
Dark Brubaker.
Like, they trade that third and fourth position.
Yeah, I would think that's fair to say. But now, of course, they were there to make announcements of upcoming books. Brubaker, you know, from his work with Captain America, and I think he's actually involved, Ed Brubaker, involved with this upcoming Winter Soldier film. Is that correct?
Yes. He's a little bit of a consultant because they're borrowing from his Winter Soldier storyline, obviously, because it's called Captain America Winter Soldier. So I hope they're having him as a consultant on this film. You know, it would make perfect sense. And please, not a consultant as Geoff Johns was a consultant on Green Lantern. For the love of God, no. Back to you, Afro-Nerd.
Yeah. Well, the issue of diversity comes up once again, and we speak about it incessantly here at Afro-Nerd, as we should. But I don't want it to necessarily be a broken MP3 file. I mean, we know that we need to see better representation of minorities in comics as characters, as well as behind the scenes, more importantly, behind the scenes, we need to see more people of color in order to get that representation. Now, and also I picked up that little blurb you threw out there, Daryl, about the Kryptonian that was in Earth 2. I did notice that.
I did notice that.
That's pretty cool. And the funny thing is, well, listen, isn't now, you know, this is where you go back and forth. Earth 2 is essentially DC's DC's nod to an Ultimate Universe, more or less.
Yeah.
As I said, Marvel should have done. Marvel has been kind of lax with. We can understand all these other older characters not really changing them because they're, you know, 50, 60, 80-year-old properties. But if you're going to do a turnaround, if you're going to do a reboot for a new generation, it's got to be reflective of that new generation. So Marvel, to me, dropped the ball with their Ultimate line. I mean, you have, you know, sure, you have a black Nick Fury. You have a Miles Morales, an Afro Latino child, or I should say young man now, Afro-Latino young man. That's about it. So anyway.
Wait to say a female Peter Parker now too. So.
Well,
and,
yeah, the clone.
And now people are just going to go, oh my God, no, the sky is falling. Ah!
Well,
let's have to throw it out there.
Well, with Earth 2 seemed to be a little bit more in your face about it. You know, listen, we can debate about the Green Lantern, what they did with him. You know, whatever. The Green Lantern, Hawkgirl, and now this Kryptonian that's coming up. That's interesting. Anyway, Rob Guillory, the creator behind Chew, Chew has also been green-lighted for, I believe, an HBO series.
Yep.
I think it's a cable thing forthcoming. So, to Guillory, because Chew was an Image comic book, he was at this expo, and he tweeted out a couple of things, and they went into the rant that you would expect to be out there about, well, what's up with the representation? And Guillory said, listen, we're going to have to figure out a way to start putting out our own material. And when it's time, when there's a call out for these talents, we're not seeing them. I'm going to read some of his tweets here. Let me read this quick. It says, Rob Guillory works with John Layman on the Eisner and Harvey Award-winning Image comic 2. He got pulled into the diversity in comics discussion that stemmed from the Image Expo today when he was mentioned by another Image artist, Jimmy Robinson, of Bomb Queen, another book. Guillory gave a good and a unique insight into the discussion. Plus, I love how he responded to Robinson's mention. He says, at Jimmy Robinson, at Mark Lombardi, I think I might be black as well, maybe. Then he says, all right, let me air something out here regarding the comics diversity thing, then I'll shut up about it. I've been black a long time, and I've been doing Comic-Cons for 10-plus years, and I've noticed something. There ain't a lot of blacks in comics. Then he says, then I realized something else in over 10-plus years of doing portfolio reviews. I can count on one hand the number I've done for minorities. So what's the problem? Why do there seem to be more white fans and creators than black? Is it some secret conspiracy to hold us down? Then I started teaching comic classes in poor black neighborhoods all around Louisiana. And what was the number one reaction I had from those black kids I taught? this is what it boils down to, Daryl. He says that they say, we can do this? I thought comics were for white people. Wow. I'm just saying. I think that the diversity – this is what he says. Hold on, let me finish what he says.
Okay.
I'm just saying, I think that the diversity issue in comics is bigger than whitey's not letting blacks make comics, obviously. I don't know. I think he's on to something.
It's something we've said on the show. It's something I've said on the show. It's something I've taken flack for. It's something that I've been applauded for. It's something that people have ignored me for. It's something that I've been called a racist against my own people for saying it outside of the show, but saying it like I'm a self-loathing black man for saying this. When it comes to educational opportunities, when it comes to opportunities where you could use your head, when it comes to things like using your imagination and being creative, our own community does as much, if not more, than other community groups, make that read right, sorry white people, just say it like that, to harm our own youth and their expectations and their dreams than anybody else. Our own community does that to us. And thank you, Mr. Guillory, for saying this. Okay? We could say there is not enough representation of us up on that stage. All we want, what have you done? What have you done to try to get your name out? He has just said he's got one of the most high-profile books out there today, amongst the comic community. This is a dude you need to be poaching for advice, okay? We asked who would step up and take the place, take the flag, hold up the stanchion once Dwayne McDuffie fell. This is the type of thing Dwayne McDuffie would say. I'm saying that right out there, right there, okay? And what made me mad more than anything is after he said it, he got partially decried by a couple of commenters. He's telling you personal experience that he wants more of us in the industry. He wants more of us in the business game. That's all I'm saying, all right? I don't have the opportunities, but if I did, I think I could give it a go. I'd do a treatment. You've heard my wild thoughts on air. You've read my wild thoughts in my blogs. I would give it a go. I would give it a try just to say I gave it a try. And this is what was these guys' honest assessments for. Don't get mad. Don't get pissed at what's going on out there if you continue to support it. If you continue to support it and you get mad at the same time, guess what that makes you? A hypocrite. I've kept a lot in. I could go a whole bunch more deeper into this. But then, like I said, Block Talk Radio would yank me in a second. But, Mr. Guillory, anybody in our community to argue that, I just say this, what have you done today? Afro-nerd, back to you.
Well, you know, this actually gets into a larger discussion, almost an Afro-nerdic discussion, because we get a bit more political on the other side of the show. But, I think it's a slow boil, Daryl, with the consciousness level being risen. And I mean a real slow boil. Something that's somewhat connected is there was a meeting of some of the neighborhood up a muckety mucks in Chicago, I believe maybe a few weeks ago. Reverend Sharpton was there, and the community, you know, because they're really suffering because of the violence. I suspect that Sharpton and I think even who's the mayor of Chicago? I should know. Who was part of Obama's team? Rahm Emanuel. They were expecting a certain type of they were expecting to do their same song and dance, and the black folk weren't hearing it. And there's been a rise of black people actually looking independently for political sustenance. It's not just going to be a given that black folk are going to vote Democratic. Now, what does that have to do with comic books? I look at that as maybe the spark of something. And I've been hearing more and more black people talking about the need to do business with each other. That when you think of during the segregation period where some of the noted pockets of black business, whether it's Tulsa, Oklahoma, whether it's in Rosewood, whether it's Central Avenue in Los Angeles, there were a number of historical points of business where black people were allowing their dollar to circulate among themselves 10, 15, 20, 30 times. And listen, thankfully, even in our own enterprise, when we interviewed the great Jocelyn Cooper of Afropunk, she reached out to us and said, hey, maybe we need to get together. And we're still working on a time. Maybe next month we'll get together. But we've been having discussions of you know, because Afropunk is on the move. It's on. It's onward and upward. It started out in the basement 10 years ago with maybe a couple of hundred people, Daryl, as you know. And now, last summer, the figures go for anywhere from 50 to 60,000 people attended Afropunk from just a couple of hundred from 10 years ago. So the fact that she was willing to kind of listen to what we're trying to do, we're working toward a similar goal, working on a way to promote and monetize alternative black content. The menstrual period has to go. It has to stop.
Yeah,
so the comic book, what's happening, hold on, what's happening with comics, next week we have a black comic book convention. So things are happening, but we've got to do better. We've got to figure out a way to coalesce with each other and to make that dollar circulate the way it did 50, 60, 70 years ago.
Well, and people, don't get me wrong, okay? I'm not saying you should think like we think because that's the right way to think. All I'm saying is give everything a chance, all right? How often do you hear the young black youth just, I'm not going to school. I'm not doing this. I'm not doing that. Not giving it a chance. Oh, it's boring to me. But in retarding your brain, and I'm sorry for using that word, in retarding your brain, you scale back your future. Here, Mr. Guillory is talking about, you know, I know there's talent out there amongst our community, but we've been conditioned to the point, you know, using it isn't cool. And when I say it, I mean intelligence. When I say it, I mean imagination. When I say it, I mean common sense. But go ahead. Keep on playing your knockout games. Go ahead. Keep on having babies. Go ahead. Keep on doing gang initiations. Go ahead. Keep on freaking skipping school. Go ahead. I'm using extremes. But the only way you guys listen to the message I give is if I give extremes. You don't have to listen to no other politicians. You don't have to listen to no high muckamucks. You have a brain, right and wrong. Use intelligence. Use imagination. Afro-Nerd, back to you.
Yeah, unfortunately, Daryl, we have seconds remaining. I got to go next door. As
no
always,
problem,
sir,
man.
It's been a pleasure. And
enjoy.
Also, on top of that diatribe, stop instructing babies. We'll talk about that next period. Stop instructing thug babies. Folks, bear with us. We're going to go next door. Thanks, Daryl.
Enjoy.
Spark with a beard?
I think not.
Backstage, and you want me to get more involved. I'm like, yeah, let's clean up the damn hood. Black people and white people, poor black people and poor white people live in the same conditions. Only thing, black people paint on their houses.
It's free advertising.
But, you know, I think the point is people...
If we straighten out ourselves, people would deal with us as human beings. Don't you agree? A little bit?
Well,
your kid wants something and his room is dirty, you say, get back and clean up your room. Then tell me what you want.
Cleanliness is always close to godliness. There's no question about that.
Yes, thank you.
But if you live in a certain area of town where they cut off access to capital...
Yes.
And cut off access to
and
jobs.
Don't mean
and
you can't pick up a damn piece of paper in front of your house.
But
and don't it, mean that.
But pick it up.
My mother used to make me clean up my yard and the 2 yards next door to her.
But I think it's important. You should be able to pick up paper and pick up a paycheck. Pick up paper
we
and pick
broke,
up the plumber.
And we still picked up the paper. My daddy was on strike and I'm out there sweeping away, man.
Well, my grandmother used to make us clean the dirt with a brush broom. Having said that, even that is no substitute for the right to an education,
I know, a job, and healthcare. Right, but we got to get on our own stuff a little bit.
Well,
we got to smack our own kids upside the head every now and then.
Thank you very much.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to get through this thing called life. Electric word, life, it means forever, and that's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else.
Hawk, who goes yonder?
It is I, sire, Richard of Nottingham.
Well, speak up, man, what is it?
News from the east, sire. Rick the ruler has returned.
It's abracadabra, a la baby professor, all hail funkin' lesson, sweet tongue grand writer of scrolls. Now behold, let the legend unfold, born in a cosmos, where no time and space do exist, vibe in the midst of the chaos, mortals label me as a logger.
You're traveling to another radio show, a broadcast not only of sight and sound, but of mind. A journey into a wondrous land whose boundaries are that of the imagination. That's the on-air sign up ahead. Your next stop, Afro Nerd Radio, with your guide, D-Bird, a.k.a. Afro Nerd.
Good evening, and once again, good evening, folks. This is your host, D-Bird, without the captain. The captain is out sick, a Luke Cage. He isn't a physical fitness guy, is a big dude. But hey, listen, the biggest can be taken down on occasion. Heck, I was sick briefly, but my Wakandan mutant abilities, I was able to shake it off in a few days. But the captain, he should be returning hopefully in better health Wednesday. If not Wednesday, then of course next week. Folks, this is the Grindhouse. This is After Earth featuring Captain Kirk, although Captain is not with us. Let's go to a quick urban alternative groove. When we get back, I have a lot to get into. The call-in number, don't be fearful of calling in. The water is warm. 646-915-9620. Again, 646-915-9620. That groove is Shafiq Hussein, the artist. Shafiq Hussein. The cut's called Lost and Found, featuring Jametta Rose and Bilal. Be right back. And again, let's groove. Shafiq Hussein, Lost and Found, folks. This is Afternote featuring Captain Kirk, a.k.a. Afternote Radio. The call-in number, once again, as ever, 646-915-9620. Let's see, we have a lot to get into. We only have a little bit less than an hour. They always say death occurs in threes. I think it's just how it happens. You just pick three people that just die. But to keep with that trope, we see that Run Run Shaw, who we mentioned in the last segment, Run Run Shaw of the legendary Shaw Brothers Studios, definitely one of the hallmarks of the martial arts film movement. That gentleman has left the building at the age of 106, long-lived, and very important to geeks. As I said in the last segment, without the Shaw Brothers, it's highly doubtful you would have a John Woo, you would have a Quentin Tarantino or Robert Rodriguez, or by tangential connection, the RZA of the Wu-Tang, or even the Wu-Tang Clan, for Christ's sake. The Wu-Tang Clan, that their mythology is heavily engrossed with what was created under the Shaw Brothers regime. So, again, kudos to accomplishments. Then, of course, you have Ariel Sharon, the former Prime Minister of Israel. He has left the building. Noted military strategist, known as the King of Israel, the Lion of God, highly controversial figure, but Ariel Sharon, I would assume he is being heavily applauded in his native Israel. Definitely a hero when it comes down to their wars during the 60s and early 70s, the Six-Day War, I think in 67, and of course there was the Yom Kippur War of 73. Again, considered not only with him entering the politics, but on the military field, his military career, he was considered one of the greatest field commanders in the history of Israel. So, he is no longer with us, and of course, going back to America, Amiri Baraka, a.k.a. Leroy Jones, he too has left the building at the age of 79. What can I say about Leroy Jones, a.k.a. Amiri Baraka? Briefly, the poet laureate of New Jersey, and ever a controversial figure, even I'm almost laughing talking about this, even him having that title, that was short-lived because of his demeanor, because of his fiery, cantankerous radicalism, one could say that. Specifically, this was, I think, going back 10 years. In the early 2000s, he was given that, and he right after the attack on the World Trade Center, he wrote a poem, recited it publicly, called Somebody Blew Up America. And I didn't have enough time to get that audio clip, but it's a very powerful, very controversial poem. And he ended up – well, he really wasn't fired. They threw that out there that he was fired, but they ended up just not having that title anymore. So they retired the title because of Amiri Baraka. Really came to fame during the 60s, during the Black Power movement, during the infamous Newark riots, ever a polarizing figure. I would consider him one of my heroes, but I have to say it with a caveat, because with some radicals, African-American radicals, they never left the 60s. And that's my main qualm. Heck, you can think of – who am I thinking of right now? Clarence Thomas, who to some, I should say maybe even to many in the Black community, he is a pariah, not to yours truly, but to some in the Black community, he is considered a pariah. But he, in his early underpinnings, he will tell you that he was raised under Malcolm X. And Malcolm X, if you take away
the nationalism, ever a conservative. There's definitely a conservative message in Malcolm X. Now, why I mention Malcolm X and Baraka, because you're talking about like-mindedness, but I favor Malcolm X because he was, I don't want to say just intellectually curious, even though he was, but he was willing to change. He was willing to calibrate. And that's why I still listen to the words of Malcolm X. But again, Malcolm X was 39 when he was killed. But it looks like he was on track to changing, to morphing and adjusting with what was happening in front of him. Some of these radicals that by the grace of God, are still with us and were able to live to advanced age, they never changed. They never changed. Big fan of Harry Belafonte. He's actually gotten more radical. This was a establishment civil rights person, and in his 80s, going damn near towards 90, he is as fiery as ever, and hates on President Barack Obama. So, again, one of our greats has left the building, noted poet, essayist, playwright. Many of his books are still available. I would implore or advise our listenership to definitely read some of his work. Amiri Baraka, again, has left the building. Wrote a controversial play called The Dutchman. Check that out. One of his books. Also, he was also a music critic or blues and jazz enthusiast. One book I would implore our listenership to check out is Blues People, Negro Music in White America. I mean, Baraka had an intellect. Cannot take that away from him. But from my perspective, with what's happening now, quote unquote, in the hood, I take issue with the lack of his ability and other noted black radicals from the 60s to upgrade their thinking. Because there's got to be a way to deal with the young Jeezys and the Jay-Zs, that crew. They're not able to deal with that crew. Anyway, Mr. Barack has left the building. All right. I see someone, Q Storm says, very disappointed to hear that D-Bert supports Clarence Thomas. You might want to read a couple of books on Clarence Thomas. You know, you need to read some books on, who do I always mention? Shelby Steele has some interesting words to say. You know, you have to read what these guys write. We have been conditioned to think progressively. And there's been some problems with progressive thinking. And you see what happens when you are locked into that mindset. Matter of fact, case in point, going to a segue, I want to talk about Don Lemon. Don Lemon, for the last couple of days, has been highlighting a rather tragic story regarding a toddler from Omaha, Nebraska. And Nebraska has a severe gang problem. And there's video footage of a toddler, maybe 2 or 3 years old, who is being egged on by adults, I think maybe a uncle, perhaps a mother, but I know definitely family members, adults, being egged on to act like a thug. I can't put it any other way. To act like a baby thug. So the Nebraska Police Union put up on their website this video clip of the young African-American toddler. Well, I should say African-American toddler. He's already young. And it caused a hoopla, a hullabaloo with certain folk. And it was discussed several times on Don Lemon's show. I think Dr. Mark Lamont, Mark, who I was on a panel with a couple of years ago when I was on NPR. And for those who think, how does D-Bert like Clarence Thomas? I tell you why. Based on this clip, I cannot do the liberal dance. And I was raised, believe it or not, I was raised liberally. I was raised under the helm of the Barackas and the Malcolm X's, and I still love Malcolm X, though. My love for Malcolm X has not changed because he was changing. Because he was willing to calibrate. But when you hear this clip from the Don Lemon CNN show with his interview, and I'll try to keep it brief because it's a rather lengthy one, his interview with Hill, we're in trouble. We're in trouble. The liberal mindset doesn't allow for people to deal with what's happening now in your face, to deal with reality. It's heavily based on how things should work, how things should be. And that's fine. You know, on some level, that's okay, but there's got to be a place where you are able to deal with problems head on. You have to deal. This child is reciting back to his family thug belief or a thug belief system at two. It's not unlike having seen footage of an infant being raised under a Ku Klux Klan. It's the same thing. It's the same thing. When you see a two-year-old white toddler reciting and repeating, parroting racism from the mouths of his people, that's really not that different than a gangbanger raising a toddler. If I can find this clip, bear with me, folks, because I have two clips, really. The second one actually also is with Lemon going into those who are critiquing the Nebraska police putting up this video on the web on their website, and with them doing that, they're making it seem as if, or the critique is, well, this is racist because you're putting a black child on a police website, and that child is reciting a thug methodology or a thug belief system. That within itself is considered racist. Instead of dealing with the issue is we got to get the kid out of there. All right. So this is Don Lemon, Dr. Mark Lamont Hill, and I think one other guest, and they're going back and forth. I'll try to give you a couple of minutes of this. It's rather lengthy. Listen closely, folks, to Dr. Hill's, how he reacts to this. Listen to his logic, because I don't think it's fair. And you wonder why I listen to black conservatives. There's a reason. Pretty blunt. Hold on.
A continuing cycle of violence and thuggery. That's how the Police Association in Omaha, Nebraska, describes a disturbing video it posted on its website. The video shows a boy in diapers being told to repeat profanities and sexual comments by the adults who were taping him. The union says it posted the video to educate the public about the culture they are dealing with in Omaha. But critics say posting the video goes too far. We have blurred the toddler's identity and censored the bad language, but I want to warn our viewers, the video is still disturbing. CNN's Casey Wyan out front with this story.
The video shows a young child, perhaps 2 or 3 years old, in a disturbing, profane war of words with at least three adults. They seem irritated over a fallen chair.
You a bitch. You throwing a fit right now, little You ain't talking that now.
The child then flips his middle finger at the camera.
You too.
The toddler, whose face was shown in the original video but CNN has obscured, exchanges at least 35 swear words with the adults in the 1 minute 23 second video.
Say bitch. That's why you can't fight.
You a bitch.
Bitch.
They discuss sexual matters, even apparent gang affiliations.
Oh, where is he from? I'm from Deuce now.
What is he from?
Something different.
16. He said he's 16.
Say the thing three times.
You a hoe. What's up there?
The video was posted on the website of the Omaha, Nebraska Police Officers Association, which says we have an obligation to share it to continue to educate the law-abiding public about the terrible cycle of violence and thuggery that some young innocent children find themselves helplessly trapped in.
When you see a child being treated like this, who can't really defend themselves, an innocent child, unfortunately, though, it's something that as police officers we see that is all too common.
Commenters on the police union's website objected to what some saw as racial overtones in posting the video.
This behavior is going to potentially lead this child down a path that is completely unhealthy. It has nothing to do with race or ethnicity.
Omaha's chief of police released a statement saying the department has no control over the content of the police union's website, and the chief strongly disagrees with any postings that may cause a divide in our community. Casey Wyan, CNN, Los Angeles.
Joining me now, CNN political commentator Mark Lamont Hill and talk radio host Mel Robbins. She's also a former public defender. I can barely watch that. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Oh, it's tough to watch. I mean, again, no law was probably broken in that video, but it almost feels like child abuse.
Yeah, it does. But that's what I wanted to ask. Listen, they said that this is an example of the thug cycle in Omaha that kids are trapped in. What do you say?
First of all, that's clearly an awful thing that just happened there. It's irresponsible. It's bad parenting. It's bad uncling, whatever you want to call it, from whoever was on that video. I'm not sure that I like the way it's framed, and I don't necessarily want to see that video on the internet because I think it sends the wrong message about young black boys. I think it criminalizes that toddler. That I don't like. Again, we all agree that's an awful thing that happened,
right.
But I'm not sure that posting it is the right thing
to
do.
They could have blurred the kid's identity so
exactly.
That you couldn't have. But listen, and you don't like that they called it thug culture?
No.
Well, the guy in the video, Mark, though, he says, I'm thugging him. I want you to say I'm thugging in my diaper.
No,
why shouldn't
the
police call it?
Well, because I think the way it's framed, again, when they say thug culture and the culture of violence, there's a racial overtone to that. It sort of prepares the public to imagine this young boy, again, someone someone who isn't even ready for elementary school yet, to frame him as a thug, I think is very dangerous and is just as irresponsible as the people in the video. Again, not defending the behavior in the video, but the way they're responding to it, not okay.
Go ahead, Mel.
Well, I'm glad. Hi, Mark. Hi, Don. I'm glad, first of all, that we all agree that this is absolutely deplorable. I think the point that the police are trying to make is that, unfortunately, this is something that they see a fair amount of. Now, here's the thing that I think that everybody's missing that's important about this story. It's not the police that originally posted this. The relatives of this kid took the video.
And then
the relative who calls this kid his nephew posted it because he thought it was great.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until the police then repost something that was already out in the public that everybody gets up in arms. I want to remind everybody, this kid was called the N-word more than 10 times in 84 seconds. Mm-hmm. That is abuse.
Mm-hmm.
I wish they could find a law to arrest these people. And to me, when I hear the word thug, particularly as a former criminal defense attorney, the word thug means a violent ruffian or an assassin, and those come in all shapes and sizes. They come in Latino gangs, they come in Irish gangs, they come in Italian gangs, and what the police are dealing with here is not a color problem, it is a violence
It's also a culture of violence, and I don't mean a culture,
yes.
Mark and Mel, not just among African Americans. This happens among many races, but this particular case, it happens to be black. And they are glorifying thug culture in this video, saying, thug in your diaper, do this.
That's disgusting.
Right.
Yeah, okay. It's disgusting. And again, when the kid posted, when the uncle posted it, I found that disturbing, too. I didn't find it disturbing when the police did it, but it takes on a whole new life when the police do it, when the state does it.
Okay, stand by. Let's look a little bit more at this video.
Stop it there, and I'm going to go to another Lemon clip where it's him essentially discussing the term thug, because later on, you know, this story is not going away. It seems to be growing. It's a disturbing sight. It's a disturbing story, but it seems to be that the issue with the conflation between thug, the term thug, and black. Now, longtime listeners of Afro-Nerd featuring Captain Kirk know this is the reason why we exist, to stop that conflation. But let's not pretend, like Dr. Hill is doing, let's not pretend that in the universe, through minstrelsy, through the rampant criminality in some of these communities, the fact that we, through tribalism, because we're not being perceived as individuals, unfortunately, because we're not perceived as individuals, black folks are being perceived in the total sense, the conflation is thug equals black. Hip-hop, or I should say minstrel hip-hop equals black. Now, there are a whole bunch of other descriptors for black that we do not see being touted around as comfortably as minstrelsy or the minstrel movement. You can go to World Star Hip Hop, you can go to Bossip, you can go to Media Takeout, you can go to daytime television, you can go to Court TV, MC Search, my dear MC Search from the Golden Age of Hip Hop, he has one of these shows now where the center of entertainment is lower tier black folk. So that aspect of black culture ends up being the core descriptor, the core definer. So this, once again, he's upset that some folks think black when they think thug. And we've got to change that. But we also have to address, we do have to address when something is pretty blatant in our face. So anyway, let's go to the second clip with Lemon unpacking on term thug. Hold on.
I just want to take a moment to talk to you about this baby, this so-called thug baby this week, the story that we found out about. I found out about this story as I was on the air one evening. Someone sent me a posting and saying, Don, have you seen this story? I left work thinking about that child. I went to bed thinking about that child. I woke up the next day thinking about that child and others like him. I came into work and I told my team we had to do it. We had to figure out how to help this child and other children. And then I would go back home and start the process all over again. Okay? So this has become a little bit personal to me just because it's about saving children. And when police have told me that this happens all around the country, every case is unique, but this one is not unusual. So let's examine here this word that we have been throwing around so much, the word thug. It's been thrown around a lot this week. People were outraged that the word was used in a story about an innocent two-year-old child, saying it's racist to do it. But is the word thug racist? Let's examine it for a minute. Lately, thug seems to have been co-opted by the black hip-hop community, but the term did not start there. People from every possible race and background have been called thugs or referred to themselves as thugs for hundreds of years. There have been Indian thugs, Irish thugs, Italian thugs, French, British, and Asian thugs. And the word thug has been used to describe all sorts of people in pop culture, in music, in art, and even politics. Roll the clip.
Thugs.
Thugs.
The thugs.
Thug.
I'm a thug.
Those thugs.
You feckless thug.
Thug.
I'm a thug.
I feel a thug.
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 The greedy thugs.
Thug life.
So you get the point here. I don't have to belabor it, right? So let's bring it back to this two-year-old child and his family, who in the video is encouraged, they encouraged him to, quote, thug in your diaper, right? The outrage toward the police might have been more justified had the family not repeatedly egged the baby on to act like a thug, thug in your diaper. They're calling police racist for posting the video of a black baby. Whether it's racist or not, listen, I'm not going to decide that. But imagine if police had not released this video. Then we would never have known what that little boy and many more children across the country go through every single day. So let's just say police motives were racist. I'm not saying they are. Let's just hypothetically say that. Why not take the outrage you have behind that and use the energy for good to actually stop a detrimental cycle of any name? Why take ownership of thuggery? There is nothing flattering or enticing about being a thug. And why get mad that someone calls you the very same name that you call yourself? If you don't want to be treated like a thug or considered one, then don't act like one. That's the message parents should be passing to their children.
All right. Again, folks, this is the Grindhouse second half afternoon featuring Captain Kirk. As I mentioned at the top of the show, the captain is out sick. We wish him a speedy recovery. I'd assume he'll be showing up on the mic this Wednesday for our midweek and review show. Getting back to this Don Lemon thug, baby thug story, you know, for those who listened to the first clip with Dr. Lamont Hill, you know, listen, Lamont Hill is an educator. He is a professor at Columbia University. He's a young man. I think he's under 40, if I'm not mistaken. He also has a gig with Arianna Huffington at the HuffPost, their online presence. So he's making the rounds, and I was on a panel with him a few years back on NPR. And I respect him, but he is so heavily wedded, so heavily glued to a progressive mindset that he can't think outside the box. He can't think at what he is actually seeing. Although I am a registered Republican, I don't sip the conservative Kool-Aid wholesale. I do not. I can acknowledge progressive ideals that I think make sense. I have an independent spirit. I'm not someone who can't think logically. But it seems as if those who I would consider ideologues, folks who are just so heavily wedded and invested in their political bent, that they can't deal with the reality. The reality is that police officers put this video up, but they did not film it. As it was noted in the piece, the family, in their dysfunctionalism, thought that there was nothing wrong here. This is just their life. Their life, their mores dictate that it's appropriate to raise a child this way. They thought this was cute. No harm done in their misguided viewpoints. So really, this wasn't posted by the police initially. This was posted by the parental figures, the adult figures in this child's life. The police got a hold of it and said, hey, look at this. This is the seed that we will eventually have to deal with, the seed that is being planted that we will have to deal with in 15, 16, 17 years, maybe even less than that. Let's say 13 years. In 13 years, you know what? I can't even say 13 years because Mr. Starks, who is an administrator in the New York school system, he's in middle school dealing with young thugs, where in middle school, we're talking about age range from, I think it's actually grade school through middle school. We're talking about from 7 to maybe 12 or 13, he's dealing with dysfunctional children of color to the point that the police have had to be called. They're called on a regular basis, not in high school, ladies and gentlemen, but in grade school and in middle school. That demographic, they're already being met by law enforcement. And the origins can be found in that video, that Dr. Hill would prefer be categorized some other way. You know, he's concerned about this reflecting poorly on black folk. And you know what? Maybe it does. Maybe it does, but it's a reality that has to be dealt with. Getting into the minutia, the ancillary issues about how this looks, and it looks bad, waste time. Let's attack the issue. You have a two-year-old literally being instructed in how to be a thug. And logically, where do you think thugs come from? Thugs do come from stage. It comes from somewhere. There is a logic to it. A racist comes from somewhere. A racist, if you want to go to a, because some folks feel like you got to make that analogy. If you think about the Klan, we've seen baby Klansmen. Or we've seen, you can go to YouTube and see toddlers in full Klan regalia. We have a call. Let's go to the caller and let's open up the discussion. 484, welcome to Afternoon. Tell us who you are and where you're calling from. What's up?
Hey, D-Bird, this is Q Stone calling. How are you?
Pretty good, man. How you doing?
Well, my blood is boiling over here. I told you if you talk about this, I'm going to call in. But I just had two quick things to say. I don't know if you saw, and I don't know how recent this clip was, but I saw a clip on Facebook, on someone's Facebook wall. It was this young man, 19 years old, who had been sentenced for life for shooting, I think it was the daughter of some family. I don't know where it took place. And you hear, now the 19-year-old was black. The family was white, so you have that dynamic. And when the judge puts down the sentence of life, the kid, the 19-year-old, he tries to get up and fight. And, of course, the deputies are all over him. But not only that, but the family of the 19-year-old, they start screaming, wailing, crying, and they turn to the family of the victim and say, "We hate you. I hate you." Okay. And they're escorted out of the courtroom. Now, the reason I bring that up is because what you have here is that this child in this video, that's going to be him in 17 years. And my question is, with the video that I'm talking about, where was all the crying and screaming and yelling when this kid who was sentenced to life for murder, where was all that crying, screaming, and yelling when he was a young child? Was he raised in a family like the toddler in this video? And the second thing that really gets me riled up is that there are people, you know who you are if you're listening, that would excuse this type of behavior for all of the wrong, stupid reasons. And if you hear my voice trembling, it's because it really pisses me off. That's all I got to say.
Yeah, Q, as always, man, we appreciate you coming through with that. I can feel the passion and you being distraught about this. And it is something that it has me thinking the same way. It's a very sad video, and it's a video that makes you feel somewhat hopeless. That if a 2-year-old can't be given reprieve, in other words, his circumstances are not allowing him to be a child. You might have heard of a local story, Q, with a toddler that was killed. His life was tragic. Black toddler, he's 4 years old. I don't know if that's considered a toddler, but a black child, 4 years old, they found him dead, I believe, in a bathtub with cigarette burns and bruises, and he was being raised by a number of individuals. The last person that pretty much visually saw him die and might have been his torturer was some transsexual person, some transgender person that not really – I don't know if he's quite related to this boy. I don't know the full – I can barely get through the story. Sometimes these stories, Q, are so tragic that it takes me a couple of days to really get into the gristle and find out what's going on. Because, once I hear, the header of what happened, I can't handle it. And this story with this Nebraska toddler is on that same level. When you see this kid being taught profanity and being taught thuggery, but at the same time, Q, going back to what this show has been talking about for the last couple of years, I distinctly remember, it's a little less now, but during, let's say, the early 2000s, late 1998, 1999, 2001, 2002, when Ja Rule was on the top of the charts, that hip-hop scene, if you remember, almost every song had thug in it.
Oh, yeah.
Thug Love, I'm Looking for a Thug. I mean, there was a point where you couldn't have a hit unless you had some kind of thug reference, even in the title of the song. And I remember back then, I said, no one, where is the black community to discuss, isn't it a little bizarre to have odes and songs professing, quote-unquote, thug love, working on a dating site years ago and doing the research for that, you would see young women of a varied racial strata, varied, but let's say black and brown predominantly, but varied, they would request, I'm looking for a cute thug, as if a thug is a vocation like an attorney. So this has been going on for decades.
Well, speaking of that, you say that's a good segue. You say it's been going on for decades. I don't know if you recall, maybe 3 or 4 years ago, there was another video that was posted. Now, this also made national news. There was two young men in a house. I don't know where this took place, but they had two children with them, and they were encouraging them to take hits on some weed. Do you recall
that
story?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so what have we learned from then to now? It really fires me up that we're trying to put the onus on the policemen who posted this video. I thank them. I don't care if they're members of the KKK. I thank them for putting that up because now we see it. And now maybe something can be done about it. And for all those enablers out there, I just hope you're not raising children.
Yeah, Q. You know, the main component, I'm going to go to a quick break, and we're going to go into another topic, if you have enough time. I want to dovetail off of this with Amy Chua's upcoming book, which kind of goes into this a little bit, but in harsher tones. Triple Package, a book coming up next month called Triple Package. We know her for the Tiger Mom book from a few years ago, where she's back with under the same premise, and it's rather harsh about cultures, not necessarily race, cultures and ethnicities that are succeeding. Not race, but culture. And what this really goes into is we don't want to deal with it this way. Dr. Hill doesn't want to deal with this. He doesn't want to call it a culture. Confused by this. If we were able to, listen, a doctor can best help his patient once he identifies the ailment. The ailment is culture. This is, the gang lifestyle is a culture. It's a culture. And you could tell he had a problem with the tribalism and he had a problem with culture. And that's the two components that's part of this problem. We can talk about poverty and education, but above all of that, it's a culture. Thug cycle.
I was going to say, that opening that you played before the show with Chris Rock and Jesse Jackson, to me, brilliant choice. Brilliant choice of an opener, of a cold open. It encapsulates the problem. Chris Rock, you know, who's, I assume he's considered down, you know, he's a down brother, this and that. He is trying to tell Jesse Jackson, the brother who grew up or came up in the civil rights struggle, what the deal is. And Jackson's not trying to hear it.
Q, I'm glad you reminded me of something. I want to point this out to the audience, is that, listen, I used to be an admirer of Reverend Jackson. I remember graduating from my eighth grade class. I actually recited one of his speeches for the graduation. You know, if you can conceive it, you can achieve it. If you believe it, if you can conceive it, you can achieve it. That's something that I believe he probably pulled that out from somewhere else. But I can conceive it.
We know that because he took it to Clinton's White House.
Right. Well, I channeled that during my eighth grade graduation. So I was a Jesse Jackson supporter. But you grow up, you read, you see different ideologies, you read different politics, and you see things differently. And I have to mention this, that, listen, Jesse Jackson has two family members in jail right now, his son and his daughter-in-law. They're in jail right now, and it's probably because of this lack of an ability to deal with reality. And that's what black folks, I would hope, maybe the message is starting to seep in. I referenced what happened in Chicago recently. In Chicago, they had a pretty sure Sergio and Kim Success can talk about it because they made the news. They had this meeting with Rahm Emanuel and Reverend Sharpton, and the folks did not really want to hear their stuff anymore. They didn't want to hear it anymore. That might be a good thing.
But with what happened with that that cold opening, as you put it, I reference that opening because really, the bare bones of it, and our president has channeled Dr. Cosby and Chris Rock, truth be told. Chris Rock is really Dr. Cosby. He just says it in a more visceral tone. He's more visceral about it, but he's telling you like it is, and you have your leaders, like Reverend Jackson, telling you, being very dismissive. He was very dismissive about what Chris Rock was saying, and Chris Rock was being absolutely honest. Things have got to change, Q. Listen, as always, continue supporting. Things are going to get bigger and better and brighter for 2014. Trust me on that. Let's go to a quick groove, folks. When we get back, you know what, Q, actually, hold on. I want to carry you over, if you have time, carry you over to the next segment. I want to talk a little bit about Amy Chua. All right, hold on. This is Lemon Meringue Fishbone. We'll be back in a few moments. Okay, folks, pulling out the phaser once again, that was Lemon Meringue, legendary punk ska band Fishbone. The call-in number 646-915-9620, again, 646-915-9620. We have stalwart listener, friend of the show, Q-Storm. I have him in for the second segment. It's going to be a very brief one, unfortunately. As much as I love these double entendre shows, they end up going very quickly. I've been trying to get Amy Chua on the show. I spoke with her representatives back when she had the Tiger Mom, the Battle Hymn of the Tiger Mom, which really was a treatise professing the superiority of Chinese mothering. But to be fair, she also said that there are Tiger Moms ethnicities. She referenced Caribbean households. She referenced other ethnicities, Jewish households, that essentially channel the Tiger Mom parenting model. So she's back again with her husband, Ms. Chua, not hard in the eyes from my perspective anyway. She is married to a Jewish educator, I believe. She's a Yale professor, and she's back again with another book called The Triple Package. So I think I have a clip here. While I search for the clip, essentially she's saying that there are superior ethnicities. Now, she doesn't say race. And maybe to be politically correct, maybe not to be racist, or maybe to be just accurate.
because it's, I've never said that it's about, it's not about race, because the races are represented, the races are represented in her book. She mentions, as we have mentioned, that the most educated ethnic group in the Americas are Nigerians. They are the most degreed, the best educated are black people. And when I was getting my admissions also, when I was getting my master's at St. John's, I was the only African-American in my class. The other black folk that I of note that were in those classes, just it just so happens they were Nigerians. They were Nigerians. So I want to get this book. I'm going to try my best to get it back on there. I see we have another caller. I'm going to open up the lines to this caller with Q. Let's go to this. I'm going to try to play this clip, too. So let me go to the caller, too. 630, welcome to Africa Radio. Tell us who you are, where you're calling from. What's up?
Talking to me?
Yeah, 630.
Yeah, hi. You were talking about the Nigerians being the smartest group of black people.
Statistically, it's say they are the best educated. Nigerians.
Why do you think that is?
Well, it goes to culture. I mean, it's definitely not race. It is. We're dealing with, listen, the last segment we spoke about thug culture. You saw a child that's being raised under a culture of failure. And unfortunately, with country, in the last two decades, we have seen the promotion of failure. Commercial hip-hop is failure on wax. I'm talking about commercial hip-hop now. Commercial hip-hop, failure on wax. The presentation...
Well, I don't think underground hip-hop is any better.
Say it again?
Well, I don't think underground hip-hop offers a better alternative, if you ask me.
I think the subject matter is a little bit more diverse in progressive hip-hop. The hip-hop from 20 years ago pales in comparison. Well, I should say the hip-hop today pales in comparison to the hip-hop where they were at least discussing, heck, they might have mentioned Baraka, Mira Baraka on wax. They're not mentioning that now. They're talking about thuggery and minstrelsy today. Dancing is not really a type of music. It's not.
Well,
it's
you're not
going to
have
good.
A movement where the people are at each other's throats all the time and already separated. I mean, we're already a segregated people based on class, religion, and political, especially political beliefs. So I don't see any kind of movement honestly happening.
Well, listen, I'm running out of time, but if you go into Amy Chua's book, she looks at it from a macrocosmic level as well as a microcosmic level. Macrocosmic means that in America, the American culture, there's been an anti-intellectual movement for the last 40 years. Your American dad is perceived to be a dummy. Not like... a father knows best in the 50s. Father knows best.
Ozzie and Harriet.
Yes, thank you. I'm getting a brain fart there. Ozzie and Harriet. Yes, we could look at it as hokum, but the father, the knowledge base, as far as a culture. Now, American culture has it where it's cute for the head of the household to be a dummy. We applaud,
in the media.
Yes, we applaud anti-intellectualism. Whereas you can go to other nations, the Netherlands, in Asia, they are on top of scholarship. They applaud scholarship. In this country, we applaud the dum-dum. And it trickles down.
I wouldn't say that.
Q, weigh in on this. You don't think that there is... A strain of anti-intellectualism in American society today?
I mean, my God. I mean, that strain kind of – I mean, look at our political system. The strain is alive and it's a virulent strain in our political system. So, I mean, you're talking about a society where we vote based on, oh, do we know the guy's name? Or can he speak well? Or we're not informed. We're not an informed society. That – permeates our pop culture, our political culture, everything about us. So definitely, yes. I mean,
And this video that we were talking about speaks to that.
I mean,
this is cross-racial now, I'm talking.
I think America lags, 32nd in math? Matter of fact, there was something I mentioned a few shows ago, Q, if you remember. There was a deal, I think, somewhere in Colorado where there was some kind of college, maybe it was college or high school thing, where a teacher noticed that the white kids, when talking among themselves about AP courses, the white kids would say, well, are you going to take an AP course? I'm not going to take an AP course. I'm not Asian. I'm white. Now,
wow.
That's the trend. That's what's going on. So I'm not going to take advanced courses because I'm white. That's cross-racial. We're talking about the dumbing down of this country, and when you go at a micro level, you can get into the ethnicities, into the race. But black folks, specifically black and brown, have been getting a more concentrated anti-intellectual message. It's not jazz. It's not the jazz from and blues from 70 years ago. It's something else. It's a type of propaganda that's been dumbing us down. While everybody else is on the right page, we're not on that page. We don't even want to be on that page anymore. We have Kim Kardashian making millions, and she's a dum-dum.
You don't know that.
Well, she's a dum-dum. I've heard her. She's not a formally educated person. I do know it.
Well, you don't know her
so?
Personally. You can't make that judgment based on her in the media.
We can
see how she speaks and when she's interviewed.
But do you know her personally enough to make that statement?
I don't know Kim Kardashian personally, but
then
I've
you can't
seen,
make that statement. Then you're spouting a false ideal.
I've seen quote. I've heard read quotes of her. I've seen her interviewed in the media.
You mean
and
the quotes that have been manufactured by various websites and parroted as though they were true?
No, I'm talking about where I've seen her speak, and she doesn't present herself as an intellectual.
In your opinion?
No, based on the objective fact of seeing her speak.
Then how would an intellectual present themselves then? Is there one standard to an intellectual or just...
Well, I can
I'm not understanding your argument. You're confusing me.
I can tell you that, for example, I'm a huge fan of Bill Maher's show, and there's a particular actress, Eva Longoria, that I thought was not very bright as well. But she went on the show, and she disproved all my notions because she spoke intelligently. She spoke from knowledge about certain political issues and certain societal issues. So my judgment of her was broken because she presented herself to me and to the general public as someone who could speak on an intellectual level. I haven't seen that from Kim Kardashian.
I would have to concur with that also. Gentlemen, we only have – well, actually, the show is over. We'll reconvene on Wednesday for the Midweek in Review show. I will say this much just to kind of dovetail off of what Q was talking about, is that there are some folks that are put into positions to obfuscate facts, to distract. I talked about licensed fools. These are real terms. You go to etymological studies and look at terms like licensed fools, natural fools, court jesters. They date back to the medieval times. And nothing has changed. You have folks that are paid to distract. And I think that the Kardashians are evident of that. They're not meant to be. God bless them. They're not meant to be wise thinkers. The issue is, why are they put into that position? Why aren't we putting scholars in scholars and scientists and folks of note, educators, in positions?
And let's not forget, Kim Kardashian is known for a sex. She came onto the scene because of a sex tape with Ray J. Not exactly a member of the Algonquin Roundtable.
Thank you.
Well, I'm pretty sure they would make a good sex tape, sir.
We saw her talents, and that, I believe, is what happened. She's put into a position, like many natural and licensed fools, to distract. Look up, simply, you can even go to Wikipedia, look up court jester, where court jesters were. Many in entertainment are essentially modernized court jesters. They're there simply to distract the populace from what's really going on. Well, on that note, sirs, definitely been a pleasure. We will reconvene on the midweek and Wednesday at 7 p.m. Let's go on out. One of my personal music heroes, Prince, 100 miles per hour. See you Wednesday. It's been real. We'll be right back.
exception.